go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Great God Almighty, it feels like I've been away for a week. Oh, wait. Yeah, I have been. Hi, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That is where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and be part of the madcap multimedia real-time wacky zany extravaganza that is The Horn chat room that takes place during the hours in which this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's still Eastern Daylight Time for a few weeks yet. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is, in fact, the ninth day of October 2017, and although it is the ninth day of October 2017, it is The Horn's first broadcast of 2017, because, of course, I was in D.C. all last week. And I'm told, thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, that both streams are running hot and true over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and HeadOn.live. All those streams are up and running, which means we should be up and running as well at places like Stitcher and TuneIn and Roku and golly Moses, all kinds of different streaming platforms. Yes. So we've probably got a lot to talk about this evening, a whole lot to talk about. And before we do that, just a couple of notes. First of all, this program is brought to you by Anodyne Arugula. Anodyne Arugula, when you just can't stand to get your arugula, the natural chew it up with your mouth eater way, and have to take it in capsule form. Anodyne Arugula from Horn Labs. Yes, you know, I've never cared much for arugula, and to this day, the only way I can get my daily nutritional complement of arugula goodness is with Anodyne Arugula from Horn Labs. That's right. If you order right now, a 30-day supply of Anodyne Arugula is only $29.95. If you order a 2-month supply, it's only $60, and for only $90.75, you can get a 3-month supply of Anodyne Arugula from Horn Labs. Order it now. Supplies are limited. Operators are standing by. This is a free call. Anodyne Arugula, to help you get whatever it is that arugula provides in your diet, like roughage or something. Sure, why not? And if you act now, you'll also get a bundle of, it costs us about maybe 2.5 pennies of test strips so that you can test to make sure that your Anodyne Arugula really is the useless nutritional supplement that we here at Horn Labs promise you it is. Anodyne Arugula, only from Horn Labs. Order today. No, really, there's no Anodyne Arugula, you know that. We just like to be like the cool kids who are sponsored by skeevy Russian websites and sleazy Russian oligarch billionaires and have a nutritional supplement to hustle. This program is brought to you by the Horn Family Community Congregation, including our subscribers, many of whom, things aren't as bad as they could be looking because of our subscribers, looking backwards, we would be in a terrible hole right now if it weren't for our subscribers, the happy few. Subscribers like Kathleen in Minnesota. Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you also to our buddy Brother Deacon Gerald, who is, of course, chair of the Building and Grounds Committee at the Cathedral of Common Sense. Thank you, Gerald. And as well, thank you. Thank you very kindly to Khalil in Texas. Thank you, Khalil, for helping out. I've got a lot more to go through in these. Thank you very kindly at the first of the month to our buddy Anatole. Thank you, Anatole. Just bear with me. Thank you, Paul, who was in withdrawal. Paul was in withdrawal over the week and helped out along the way. Thank you, Paul. Thanks go out, of course, to Tom. Tom in PA. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Thank you as well to Nancy in Virginia. Thank you, Nancy. And thank you to Dwayne in PA. Thank you, Dwayne. Thanks also to Marsha. Thank you to Marsha in Oregon. Thank you very, very kindly. Let's see. Had a couple of failed subscriptions. Hopefully folks will notice that. Thank you very much to Dr. Allen down in Texas. Thank you, Dr. Allen. And thank you to Reed in California. Thank you, Reed. Much obliged indeed. Thanks very kindly to Bob. Thank you, in North Carolina. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Kitty in Boston. Thank you, Kitty. This is the list of people who help keep this program on the air with their subscriptions. Thank you to Laurel in Minnesota. Thank you, Laurel. Thanks to Chris in Germany. Very kindly. Thank you, Chris. And thank you to Sal. Thank you, Sal. Thank you as well to Alex in New York. Thank you, Alex. Thanks to Brock in PA. Thank you, Brock. Thanks to Kim in New Jersey. Thank you, Kim. And thank you to Don in PA. Thank you, Don, very much as well. Let's see, just going through the list here. Thanks very much to James in Illinois. Thank you, James. And thanks, of course, to thanks to Paul. And thanks to Catherine in California. Thanks to Thomas in Ohio. Thank you to Jules in Talibandiana. And we are almost to where we, yes, thank you very kindly to Stephen in California. Thank you, Stephen. And thanks to Renee in D.C. Thank you, Renee. Thanks to John in Talibandiana. Thank you, John. And to Janice in Wisconsin. And in the far frozen, well, not yet frozen north, thank you to Ron. Thanks, Ron. And thanks to Glenn as well. And thanks, Reggie. And thanks to let's see here. Thanks to Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. And to Albert in North Carolina, and Elizabeth in New York, and to Darren in California. And there are still a few more, but that takes a little bit that takes a little bit more. Well, I'll get to that. But these are the happy folks who help keep the horn on the air. We are still a long, long way from the fantastic 400, but we are much the better for the subscribers who do provide, because like I said, we'd be in a hell of a fix without them, with my having been gone for the last week. So thank you, one and all. Remember, you can subscribe either through headonradionetwork.com and by clicking on the contribute tab and checking the little box, or you can go over to Patreon, patreon.com, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, and that way you don't have to fool with PayPal if PayPal is something that you don't like. And so with that having been said, it is the first broadcast of the month. And that means that, it means a couple of things. The first broadcast of the month brings with it Shirley's Memorial Challenge. And that is on the table this evening. As usual, a group of members of the Horn family have decided, including but not limited to Ralph's and our buddy Laborman, have decided not to let Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge go by the boards, and to keep it going as a memorial to our dear friend Bruce, who passed away last December. So that is on the table. In other words, $200 comes in, it gets doubled. And there's another challenge on the table. And this comes from our buddy Matt in San Francisco. Just one second. There we go. I got this note from Matt this morning, and he said, Thursday of last week, my sister Constance died from pancreatic cancer. I could go on and on and on about what a wonderful, supportive, sardonic liberal champion she was. I really am not sure if this is appropriate, but I'd be humbled if I could begin the Monday show with a $300 Have a Show challenge in her memory. And there's also a song request, which we will do at the top of the hour. I've got it queued up. But Matt says, I'm an atheist, but the song speaks to my wounded soul that's coming to terms with her leaving this dimension too soon. Well, I understand that, and I was touched deeply by Matt's note, because I can tell you that I know for a fact that pancreatic pain is a horrible, horrible thing. And I hope I never have to know, but I can only imagine and try to empathize with what Matt's sister Constance had to deal with as she fought her good fight. So that is on the table as well, a $300 challenge in memory of Matt's sister Constance, who passed away last week of pancreatic cancer. Taken together, those two challenges, if met, would completely wipe out the deficit from last week, as well as knocking down this week's, or not this week, but this evening's fundraising as well. So thank you. Thank you for that kind offer, and thank you for remembering your dear sister that way, Matt. And thanks to Laborman and Ralphs and one other who prefers to remain nameless, for Shirley's Memorial Challenge, both of those happening on this ninth day of October 2017. So they'll be on the table through the program, and to give folks listening via podcasts and whatnot a chance, they'll stay on the table. If not met by program's end, they'll stay on the table through airtime tomorrow. Thank you very kindly to Steve in New York. Welcome back, Bob. All clear here in New York City. Thank you. Anything happened while I was gone? No, that's a really kind of a jerk sort of way to go about getting back behind the microphone. Yeah, so we won't do that. I know what happened while I was gone. A horrible thing happened while I was gone. And, consequently, well, so just to sort of provide a timeline, I drove, up to D.C., a week ago yesterday. I learned along the way that, well, I'm developing a list of automobiles I never want to own. And we can now add to that the Hyundai Santa Fe. Ew. Just ew. Once again, it's not that I'm that broad a beam, but daggum. Once again, it's like riding on a paint can with a pillow on top of it. And, of course, I-81 was a rolling disaster going north, and once again, a rolling disaster going south. What should be about a 4.5 to 5 hour drive turned out to be, seven. Because somebody always screws up on I-81 somewhere in Virginia. In fact, I'd planned to be on the air for Friday on the Front Porch this past Friday. Left in plenty of time from Manassas and was toddling right down the highway, doing just dandy. And somewhere south of Harrisonburg, traffic slowed to a standstill. And then I-81 southbound just became a parking lot. With no exit in sight by which to sort of do a workaround. So, no, I sat behind a burgundy-colored Cadillac SUV with a sticker on the back of it that said, "Not I, but Christ," as she did her best to try to, win some race that was going on in her mind and get out in front of all the heathens. It didn't work that much, really. But that's, by the time all was said and done, I was rolling through the door here about, 7 o'clock or a little before, and no way to get on the air. The work itself in D.C. was productive, and I think helpful. And I think, I'll probably be going back, not this month, but soon. If things develop the way that we hope they do. And then, of course, there was the matter of walking around. Got up Monday morning to the news of what had happened Sunday night in Las Vegas. And there was the usual. I'm deeply conflicted about how to describe how this sort of thing is covered in the for-profit media. Because it's almost formulaic. As if, first of all, I don't know how many times the various and sundry alphabet soup networks must have run that shaken, terrifying cell phone video of the sound of what was, for all intents and purposes, automatic rifle fire. Blasting into that concert audience in Las Vegas. Guy was about a quarter mile away. You know all the details by now. On the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, he had bashed out the windows with something like a sledgehammer, which the New York Times at one point in time, according to what I was reading, the New York Times described, and I don't know if Greg Stinkyard or whatever his asshole name is over at the NRA was incensed by this. You might remember the clip from a couple of weeks ago. The New York Times referred to the thing that the killer, the murderer, the monster used to break out the windows as a sledgehammer may have been the weapon. Really? A weapon. Something used to bash out a window, and they refer to that as the weapon. Oh, never mind. No. So, yeah. And people were, of course, traumatized and re-traumatized by the for-profit media. With the showing of that terrifying video. And it reminded me of, well, there's a, I guess the for-profit media in the era of the 24-hour news cycle, or the endless news cycle, perhaps, they got to have content, and it's television, so you got to show something. And the first time I remember just being bombarded with a horrifying image was, of course, 1986 and the Challenger disaster. And then, of course, there was the photos of the smoking rubble of the Murrah Federal Building. And then in 2001, time after time, again and again and again and again and again, video of the jetliner striking one of the Twin Towers. And it's traumatizing on the one hand, but it also, well, you tell me what you think. Does it serve after a while to desensitize? Oh, it's that again. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I've seen this before. Yeah. And sadly, the nation has seen this before. But I happened to be, you know, instead of sitting here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by Cole, Virginia, Stan, I happened to be in Washington, D.C. in the aftermath of what happened in Las Vegas. And I got to sort of watch unfold via alerts to my phone how it was being handled. And it was not inspiring. And eventually we learned about things like bump stocks. Oddly enough, when I heard the term, I knew what one was, because I had learned what one was from my son, who knew what one was because he's a born and bred hillbilly. And apparently they're all the rage. Pun not entirely intended. By now, I'm sure you know, because you have been inundated with this knowledge, a bump stock is a little device that you can put on a semi-automatic assault rifle, which will use the recoil action of the rifle itself to bump the trigger against the finger of the shooter, thereby making it act like an automatic weapon where, you know, and the difference between semi-automatic and automatic, for those who don't know guns, semi-automatic, you know, you pull the trigger, the gun, it shoots, you pull the trigger, you shoot again, blah, blah, blah. Automatic, you pull the trigger once and it stops firing until you let up. And you can get a really, really rapid and horrifying rate of fire out of that. They're handy for laying down suppressive fire in military situations, in battle. And, of course, these are the sorts of weapons. Gee, I'm sorry, NRA. I hope you don't get a sad for me calling these goddamn engines of death weapons. These are weapons that are designed for killing other human beings. You don't go hunting. You don't go elephant hunting with an AR-15 or an AK-47. No. And right now, I guess I'm just sort of getting stuff out of my head that I haven't been able to really deal with in the last week, as is so often the case. This program proves to be therapy, not just for you, but for me, and that gives it a sort of value-added component. But I found myself, once again, wondering, you know, what the hell is wrong with people that they think they need to own a military-style rifle, especially if, you know, one is an up-by-the-bootstrap, self-reliant hunter from the heartland. Yeah? Man. Can you imagine? All right, now we're going to put this aside for a minute, and we're not going to do a bunch of emails about, well, no, he didn't act alone. Can you imagine Lee Harvey Oswald with an AR-15 and a bump stock? Huh? Yeah. Right. Because more than anything else. I mean, in terms of things to compare it to, you got that and you've got the tower at the University of Texas. When it comes to mass killing, you know, Mother Lanza's son, Adam, was much more up close and personal with the precious little tykes that he murdered in Newtown. It was much closer quarters in the movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. It was classroom by classroom at Virginia Tech. This was, like I said, nearly a quarter mile in distance and 320 feet in height above the target area. Jesus, I hated a target area. I know. Arthur asks, but Bob, how are we going to hunt down the aggressive hordes of Norblappian geese with just 12 non-automatic rounds? And Silent R. Lamar says, hey, Bob, those Americans think they're in the streets of the Middle East. Well, I might take issue with the use of the word think, but I get the idea. So the guy had been staying in the Mandalay Bay, and he had the money to stay in the Mandalay Bay because he was a millionaire. He owned a couple of aircraft. He owned four houses. He was into high-stakes gambling. And no one ever would have imagined that Stephen Paddock would be the kind of guy who... Oh, shut up. He was a guy who owned a shitload of guns. That, of course, immediately makes him the kind of guy who would do that. Because, well, I'm sorry. I know there's some sort of line here, and I know the NRA gets a terrible, terrible angry when we talk about things like this, but the NRA is just going to have to fuck right the fuckity-fuck off. Because I don't give a goddamn. I'm out there on record with this program, easily accessed, referring to the NRA as the wealthiest, most powerful, politically well-connected domestic terror organization in the United States for a long damn time before anybody else has gotten around to saying that, although I have heard it said lately, welcome to the party, y'all. Come on in. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, if you collect a shitload of guns, there's something wrong with you. If, you know, I would start the bidding on something wrong with you at owning a semi-automatic assault rifle in the first place. Your AR-15s and AK-47s and the like that are designed solely for military purposes. I'd start right there with wanting to own one. But when you get up to owning 23 and 30 and 37 and 40, I think that probably, although I'm not a psychologist and I don't play one on the radio, rises to the level of obsessive compulsive conduct. And that can possibly mean trouble. So that's the answer. Well, how could he put... And you know, there was the New York Times, jumping Jesus H. Christ, referring to him in an early headline as... Where is it? Las Vegas gunman Stephen Paddock enjoyed gambling, country music, lived quiet life before massacre. You know, with that headline, you wouldn't even know that he's the guy who committed the massacre. He could just as easily be one of the people who got massacred. Lived quiet life. He was kind of, he kept to himself. He flew the flag a lot, you know. We never caught him kneeling at the flag or anything, so it seemed like he was a pretty solid citizen. Because we still got that in the news. And we've got some... a great big giant, oh, fuck you, Bob Corker news, too. Because it's Moran Monday. Oh, it is Moran Monday. And speaking of Morans, this. Did anybody happen to notice? I know I was gone and everything, but did anybody happen to notice where bump stocks originated? With a little patriotic, small business startup in Moran, Texas. Anybody notice that? Did anybody go out and maybe, you know, melt a rubber chicken at midnight to the goddess of irony? Maybe that would have been an early clue for folks like us who pay attention to things like that, that bump stocks come from Moran, Texas, at Bueller? Because it's true. Slide Fire Solutions and another little company, both owned by the same guy, are headquartered in the tiny little hamlet of Moran, Texas. Yep. And the Dallas News had a profile of the fella who runs the place. His name is Jeremiah Cottle, C-O-T-T-L-E. And Jeremiah Cottle is just a good, God-fearing, law-abiding, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christian entrepreneurial capitalist in Moran, Texas, who had this here idea because he wasn't satisfied, Jeremiah Cottle wasn't. Don't worry, I'm getting around to a point here. Jeremiah Cottle wasn't satisfied with how quickly he could fire his good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, ammo-sexual assault rifles. I mean, I'm sitting here, if we were doing video, you'd see me just doing the trigger finger thing with my index finger, and I mean, you can, and after a while, you know, your finger starts getting tired. It gets, and you might have to take a break from shooting NATO rounds. You know, standardized NATO, yeah, right. And your finger would get all tired, but if you got you one of them bump stocks, well, the way he figured is he'd use the recoil, and it would just brrr, 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 only not like brrr. You know, that just sounds like something from a Paul McCartney song. It sounds like something from Uncle Albert Admiral Halsey. Brrr, brrr. That kind of rapidity. So, several years back, Jeremiah Cottle took something like $120,000 of his own money, and because of the American entrepreneurial spirit, he set up a little metal building, and begun to make these here bump fire stocks. Speaking to the Dallas News, he said, "I'm a hunting and fishing kind of person." Mm-hmm. They also described him as unshaven and red-eyed. Cottle, age 40, declined to talk about the shooting or the blowback against the company he founded in 2010. At the last census, Moran had a population of 270. Since the tragedy, the tight-knit community has rallied around Cottle. He said he was heartened by his neighbor's response, adding, "We've lived here since the 1880s. Well, it seems to me Jeremiah Cottle would be a lot more than 40 if that were the case, but never mind who's counting. "We've always been about community. Everybody is. That's the way we live out here." And the Dallas News goes on to point out that if Slide Fire Solutions and Bump Fire Amalgamated, the two companies he has out there in Moran, Texas, were to close, well, it would hurt the whole town, the school. "We pay a very large amount of property taxes. I'm one of the largest businesses in Shackelford County." And one of the largest employers at one time, Slide Fire Solutions, employed 27 people, the equivalent of a tenth of the town's population. Why, thank you, Dallas News, for dividing 270 by 10, because some of us have a real hard time doing those gazettas on the fly. So it was just a case of the entrepreneurial, inventive spirit of America trying to come up with a way to circumvent the law against having your own personal goddamned arsenal of machine guns, which is what Stephen Paddock eventually had. What there were 12, 13 of those things in the hotel room? And you can, I know this is speculative, but bear with me here, please. So the way that works out is what you do is you load all your guns, and you probably got some high-capacity magazines on them, and you got bump stocks on all of them. And when you get into the situation where you're committing where you're committing mass murder, well, we've all seen what happens when the gun jams or the gun misfires. Then the intent of the murderer is frustrated insofar as not nearly as many people get murdered as the mass murderer intends to murder. So what you want is to have about 13 of these goddamned engines of death, all of them with bump fire stocks attached to them, And you just kind of, it's just Davy Crockett at the Alamo, don't you understand? So you brrr, chuck the weapon, pick the next one up. Brrr, next weapon. And so you're not fooling. And if one happens to jam, you throw that little bastard away and you pick the next one up. And brrr, and you can, I wonder, from the 32nd floor through the window that he bashed in with that sledgehammer weapon, bashed out probably, more likely, could he hear the screams from 320 feet up? I mean, it's 10 feet to a story, 32 stories, so that's 320 feet doing the ciphering on the fly. Could he hear the screaming? Did he enjoy it if he could? And, yeah, there was one little thing. So apparently he hated smokers, and he hated smokers who smoked around him. So his brother said that he would carry a cigar with him, even though he wasn't a smoker, but he would carry a cigar and light it up and blow smoke back at the cigarette smokers, as some sort of passive-aggressive, I think his brother described it as a microaggression. Whew. But we were in Moran, Texas, where the bump fire stock was invented and developed, and freedom and liberty and amosexual fundamentalism were celebrated, and where Jeremiah Cottle is worried about going out of business, what with 58, 59 dead people and 500 wounded people or so, and all of it made possible almost exclusively by his little invention. Mm-hmm. Well, oddly enough, one of the things that didn't get mentioned in the for-profit media reports that I saw was something that did show up in this Dallas News article. According to a 2000... Okay, so he wants to engage in some American free market capitalism by creating a gizmo that, without modifying the mechanics of an assault rifle per se, will allow the assault rifle to behave as a fully automatic machine gun. Because having a fully automatic machine gun, while legal, having one of them, it'll take you every bit of a year to get, and cost you upwards $12,000 to $18,000, and there's tax stamps involved and all kinds of limitations on your ammo sexual fundamentalist Second Amendment freedoms. And it would have taken Stephen Paddock 23 years to get all of those actual machine guns, when all he had to do was drop somewhere between $50 and $200, and he's a goddamn millionaire in the first place, so who gives a damn? And boom, bump stock. Right. But what doesn't get mentioned is, how many of these things are there? You know, it's a little bit like, the movie Jaws, where early on there's a question, is this just one shark or are there a lot of sharks? Well, Stephen Paddock didn't buy the majority of the output of Slide Fire Solutions or Bump Stock Amalgamated's output. No. Just bought a few of them. And interesting fact, in the days immediately following the massacre in Las Vegas, he had to suspend production because he couldn't keep up with all the goddamned orders of everybody out there, all the people with all the assault weapons. You know what? Them things work real good. You know what? I'm gonna get me a couple of them for when the jackbooted government comes to put its jackbooted jackboots down on my freedom-loving neck right next to the tattoo there where it says only God can judge me. Question coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Does anyone else find it ironic that more than double the number of the entire population of the shithole where they make the bump stocks were hurt and killed in this one single instance? It is not lost on me, Brother Deacon Asa, because after all, we are talking about Moran, Texas. In my father's house are many Morans. So, they've been busy at Bump Fire Solutions, and there are tens of thousands of these, if we can't call them weapons, let's just call them firearms designed specifically for eliminating life from human bodies. There, that's a little wordy, but it's also accurate. They've sold thousands of these things, tens of thousands of these things. But before he got started, Jeremiah Cottle reached out to the ATF folks and said, hey, is this legal? Because if it was legal, he was going to make him some serious coin. Is this legal? ATF said, well, it doesn't mechanically alter the working of the rifle, so yeah, I reckon it is. Get to it, eager, young, entrepreneurial, free market capitalist. And he did. Dallas News article notes, according to a 2011 article in the Albany News, Cottle spent $120,000 of his life savings developing the idea and getting a patent for it. It was an immediate hit. You know, just quick note to the editorial staff over there at the Dallas News. I wouldn't describe it as a hit. I would say it was popular with gun owners or something like that, because a hit was basically what Stephen Paddock put out on somewhere around 600 human beings trying to enjoy a concert in Las Vegas. Just, you know, I'm saying. We were expecting to sell 50 to 1,000 units the first year. But we sold that many in the first week, the article quoted Cottle as saying. We were expecting to sell 50 to 1,000 units in the first year, but we sold that many in the first week. So if we extrapolate that over, the say, like, till the new wears off in 2011, so what? That's 1 year, you know. Is it safe to say that from 2011 to 2017 that there's probably 100,000 of these things attached to semi-automatic assault rifles in this country? Not sure about the export market. That hasn't been mentioned much. It's a question no one really dares to ask, because America would probably collectively shit itself, while the NRA would be thrown into spontaneous spasms of uncontrollable two-handed masturbation. Mm-hmm. And so that's how the bump fire stock came to be on the end of Stephen Paddock's semi-automatic assault rifles. And that's how the bump fire stock, even now as we speak, is attached to who can possibly know how many tens of thousands of assault rifles all over the United States, just waiting for the next Stephen Paddock to come along. But not a lot of mention of that. By the way, no, not a lot. There's no real registration for bump stocks. And it's not like there's a database anywhere so that we could try to find out and recall them or pass a law ordering that they be turned back. No. And, of course, the NRA, on behalf of a class of potential plaintiffs, would sue, saying that there was an unjust taking without due process of law and without and that the property rights of the poor put upon fundamentalist ammo sexuals had been infringed upon and compromised. Yes. There's just so, you know, maybe there's just too much for the for-profit media to be able to cope with. Let's see, got some notes coming in. Talking about the headline there from the New York Times, Steve notes, and most of all, he loved freedom. Ron in Raleigh, subject line: bump stocks. Hey, Bob, I need you to explain to me why one would purchase a device that would make your weapon less accurate. I shot competitively, so I thought accuracy was the name of the game. Gun enthusiasts to me are children. They don't need these weapons, they just want them. They remind me of little children begging their parents for yet another toy that they don't need. Do you believe that the NRA's statement about not minding the regulation of bump stocks is just a sop to keep the public off their sorry asses? I'm going to get to that in a minute. But yeah, it doesn't enhance. It certainly doesn't enhance accuracy. But then again, a semi-automatic assault rifle, at all, is not as accurate as, say, maybe a bolt action sort of rifle. Steve in New York says, I didn't grow up in the gun culture, so I just have to ask why. Ron also points out, it hasn't been mentioned much, but the gunman also had a mess of Tannerite in the room. The hell was he going to do with that shit? Well, I can guess, but that's all we're doing is guessing. Set up the Tannerite before the event, and then shoot the Tannerite and blow people up at the same time that you're mowing them down with your faux machine gun. Or maybe throw it, you know, because it doesn't explode when it hits the pavement or anything. It's not like snapping pops. Maybe try to heave it out there and then shoot at that. Because, among other things, he also was trying to buy tracers. And who knew? It's legal to buy tracers. Tracer rounds. Yeah, you can buy those. And you can use those to adjust your azimuth and things like that and make your nighttime firing much more accurate. Mm-hmm. Ernst with an email. Bump stock review. You got to read this. The stock comes with the DOJ BATFE letter that explains the legality of the stock, so bring it to the range with you, just in case you come across an ignorant officer of the law or boot-licking do-gooder who thinks your stock is illegal. Jesus Christ. So there's a, you know, barring some sort of litigation that would allow us to engage in discovery and opening Mr. Cottle's books, and of course he's the manufacturer, so he sells it to resellers who resell, and maybe there's some at a bunch of gun shows, and hell, they might have them down at your shooting sports enthusiast sporting goods store, you know, right next to the Tannerite. So we got no real idea how many of these things are in how many hands, and of course it bears also noting that we have no idea the relative sanity of the people who have these things. Because look, Stephen Paddock came up with the idea, but he didn't come up with it, how can I put this? If he had that idea, when you get into matters of numbers and scale, if he had the idea, somebody else has had it too. It's just that he had, by virtue of wealth privilege, the means of putting the plan into action. I mean, Jesus Christ. He had a predilection, although he had four homes, he had a predilection for staying in hotel casinos where he gambled like crazy. And so what? Gamble. That's cool. Whatever. But he'd stay in the hotel for weeks on end, so he was probably a known quantity for staying in a high roller suite at the Mandalay Bay or whatever. Because he was in that hotel for days and days and days and days and days. And, you know, so what? Every now and then he brings in another suitcase, and the suitcase has, say, another weapon in it with another bump stock, or another suitcase full of ammunition. It's a hotel casino in Vegas. It's not like there's magnetometers in there, although there may well be now. That's the problem. Where the Second Amendment and where firearms are concerned, we are constantly at the mercy of the creativity of the murderers, and we are constantly closing barn doors after the horses are long gone. Right? But really, how many guns does a person need? We've been over this. If you're out here in rural America and you're a hunter and you take pleasure in that, well, you're gonna need a gun for turkey season. This happens to be one of those screwed up states, West Virginia is, where you can hunt turkeys with rifles, which is not terribly sporting and generally gets every year or so gets some unsuspecting hunter who rustles in the bushes and happens to have another suspecting hunter a few hundred yards away. He sees the rustle in the bushes and doesn't hear a gobbler call or anything, just shoots at the rustle and dead hunter. So you need a shotgun, probably a 12 gauge. Need a shotgun for turkey season. Probably a 30-06 or a 270 or a 30-30, something like that for deer season. That's two. Squirrel rifle, that's three. Same 12 gauge will probably do for rabbit season. It'd probably do for pheasant and duck. Might want a 10 gauge for a goose, so we're up to six. 410 for home defense and snakes. Maybe a 223 for, which is the same round that was in the assault rifles that Paddock used. It's a NATO style round. 223 for your varmints and coyotes and groundhogs and things like that. So. Seven, okay. And then if you're that deep into it, then you'll probably want a pistol, just to be, because it's West Virginia and you can carry one in your pocket and people will say, are you happy to see me or is that a gun in your pocket? And you go, no, it's a gun in my pocket. And they go, holy fuck. So, yeah. That's an argument that's not a real solid one to, but a lot of people don't necessarily understand that, and they don't need to, because we're not talking about 12-gauge shotguns, and we're not talking about bump fire stocks on 12-gauge shotguns. Jesus Christ, if you had a bump fire stock on a 12-gauge shotgun, your shoulder would be hamburger. But anyway. We're not talking about that. We're talking about assault rifles. We're talking about AR-15s, AK-47s, that sort of thing. And, sorry, opening the ginger ale. Silent R. Lamar says, I am a hunter and I need my AK assault weapon because can't clean anything I shot, Bob. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar also says, what if a good guy with a gun is a black person and the bad guy with a gun is a white guy? Who would the police shoot first? Oh, don't even go there. Yeah. Clarence with a note, subject line, police profiling. Bob, I'm wondering, when will the police start fearing and profiling adult white males? Killing and harassing non-whites has not diminished the mass killing model. The scared of blacks, Hispanics, and Muslims narrative is shouted all the time and justifies the abuse used on those groups. So, I don't know. Because, God knows, had it been that New York Times, until the massacre, he was just a guy who lived quietly and enjoyed country music. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe he decided to open up on a country music festival because he could at least hear some music he liked, as opposed to, going to, and he cased Lollapalooza and a couple of other festivals. But I guess he didn't like the music, and he wanted to hear some good country music while he was massacring people. Marty says we need to adopt Chris Rock's solution, control the bullets. Each bullet should cost $5,000. If a bullet's that much, I bet those rounds will be very secure. Kelly with a note says, my theory of the shooter is that he wanted to be more famous than his father, even though none of us knew who his father was. Because Daddy had at one point in time been on the FBI's 10 most wanted list as a bank robber. That's as viable as any theory, Kelly. Absolutely. Steve in Vermont says, my late brother-in-law was crazy for guns, hating blacks and poor people, and his son is the same way. DNA, poor parenting, and an environment of toxic masculinity keep the plague apace. Though some Americans' karma, through some Americans' American karma, in there for good measure. Yeah, I get it. Robert in Australia says, we just had a gun amnesty in Australia. 51,000 guns were handed in. I was a bit shocked that there were that many unregistered and illegal guns still out there, considering how strict Australian gun laws are, but at least they're now off the streets. P.S., the government didn't collapse and there were no riots in the streets. Which brings me to something else that I was thinking about. You know, it's the NRA and the gun goober types who are always saying, or you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. And you know how I am. I'm constantly thinking about imagery and messaging and words and what words mean. And that immediately got me to thinking about the quote that is possibly apocryphally attributed to General George S. Patton, who said the object of war is not to die for your country. The object of war is to help the other poor bastard die for his country. And then, of course, I was also reminded, okay, hands up. No, not like that. Just show of hands. There, that's better. Show of hands. Who remembers the first Men in Black movie? When the alien bug character played by Vincent D'Onofrio, he comes to Earth, and he's out in somewhere, I guess, like rural New York or something. He's crashed his spaceship. His bug ship or whatever, because everything's a movie reference with me. Got to remember that. And so Edgar, takes his Second Amendment freedom protector out where the spaceship has crashed. And, the alien bug says, relinquish your weapon. And in true NRA form, Egger says, you can have my weapon when you pry it from my cold dead fingers. And the bug alien says, offer accepted. And then pierces his guts and sucks out his innards and puts on the Egger suit. No, where is it? Remember? Right. Looking for the galaxy. Okay, so that. Now I'm not being violent or anything, but have the NRA ever actually given any thought to how they present themselves to the country? Mostly, they just bully the United States and our citizenry. But some of their messaging is just downright stupid. You can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Well, offer accepted. If that's what it comes to, that's what it comes to. You could just give them up and go about in peace. But, you know, if you want them pried from your cold, dead fingers, that can be arranged. Because I'm doubting that even with your bump fire stock AR-15, you're going to be much use against, say, you know, a Bradley fighting vehicle or an Abrams tank or, God knows, a handy-dandy little drone 10,000 feet in the air targeting your gun-loving self with a Hellfire missile. Right? So, and there I was taking Ferg to work yesterday, and some Cletus goes by us in his big old four-wheel drive pick-em-up truck with his diesel stacks on it because he's rolling coal. And he's got a sticker. He's got a decal on the lower right corner of his rear windshield of the profile of a Spartan helmet. This does not mean he's a classic scholar who enjoys reading Thucydides. No. In the lower left-hand corner of his rear windshield, there is the Roman numeral 3 in a circle. He's got a license plate says CMNTKM. Gonna take a minute with that. Come and take 'em, which is redneck license plate abbreviation for the melon washers. Molon lava, y'all, wash your melons. No, it's apparently it's Greek for come and take it, which is the words of Leonidas, the head of the Spartans at the hot gates of Thermopylae against the Persian hordes. And once again, this goes back to messaging. You can have when you pry them from my cold, dead fingers. Leonidas, they said, you know, the Persians said, you know, lay down your weapons, okay? We'll just march on through. And the Spartans, who were not nice people, okay? The Spartans would be recognized in any culture. They were terrorists. And they were a pariah state. But Leonidas said, Molon lava, motherfucker. Yeah, right? Come and take them. And the Persians said, offer accepted. So they came and took them. And the Persians left the Spartans in a big pile of deadness. Okay? Because they came and they took them. The Roman numeral 3 referred to the fact that Cletus in his pickup truck was a 3%er. Because, see, they promulgated this notion that during the American Revolution, our fight for freedom against the King of England, only 3% of the people in the colonies took up arms and won our freedom for us, and I'm a modern-day 3%er. Yeah. God bless America. That's right. I stand for the national anthem. And sometimes I pick my nose a little bit, and sometimes I scratch my ass. But I only do it with the hand that ain't over my heart, mind you. Mm-hmm. Marty noting, but Bob, these people will be using their freedom protectors to shoot down those Hellfire missiles. Gotta lead them quite a bit. John, somewhere out on the road, says, imagine the carnage when portable particle weapons become available on the internet. Oh, don't. Just don't. Which kind of leads us up to the present. And that's this. So after a few days of hand-wringing and being, you know, the NRA goes to ground after every one of these things and leaves it to other people to tell us that, well, it's too soon. We can't talk about this right now. I mean, people are entirely too emotional. We can't talk about this right now, so don't talk about this. And then so, you know, we'll let a couple of weeks pass, and, well, can we talk about it? Well, no, that's because you hate freedom. We can't talk about it. Of course we can't talk about it. Got to have guns. Guns make good God. Guns and guts and gopher guts made America great. Got to have guns. Right? Yeah. Well, it was because I guess the numbers were so profound it was just another way of saying huge. Well, the NRA issued what the simpletons in the for-profit media took for a concession. They put out a statement saying, well, we reckon it would be appropriate for the government to reevaluate whether or not these here bump stocks is legal-like. And we call upon the Congress of the new United States to make concealed carry reciprocal throughout all 50 states. Well, the Otne Ute Aitbre folks in the for-profit media only jumped on the first part of that. Well, the NRA says that maybe we can make bump stocks illegal. Whoa! No, 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 sweetheart. No, they did not say that. They said that they were going to give permission, because it's for the NRA to give permission, because they control this discussion, they own this debate. They only gave us permission to inquire again as to whether the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives was still of the opinion that bump stocks are legal. Nothing more. And at most, that they gave permission to the Trump administration to maybe regulate bump stocks. Now, understand, regulations are job killers. And poor, if they decide to regulate the bump stock industry, it's probably not going to be real good news for the folks out there in Moran, Texas. Or it might be. Because we're talking about an ATF decision that was made during the presidency of the Kenyan Muslim usurper who was trying to take away everybody's guns. Right? Remember? And the BATFE back then said, "Yep, doesn't modify the mechanical function of the firearm." So, well, hell yeah, sure, why not? Daggum that Kenyan Muslim usurper! See, it's his fault. It's his fault. He made Stephen Paddock get all them bump stocks by having his BATFE declare them to be legal. Well, now we have the administration of Geezer Disgustus, and there is absolutely no reason whatsoever to think that the BATFE, charged with the same question, namely, are these things legal, would come. Well, hell yeah, they're legal. You might need those to protect your freedom against somebody who was a kneeling of the national anthem. But above all, they did not give the Congress permission to pass any laws whatsoever making these things illegal. Or pass any laws at all touching upon the right to own just about any damned gun in any damned amounts for any damned reason that any damned American might damned well want. Okay? Just so we're clear on the topic. But it's the back end of it. It's the quo that comes as a result of the quid. The quid is, well, I reckon maybe the NRA won't send its membership out to slaughter people left and right and threaten you otherwise with our firearms if you decide to ask the BATFE if Bump stocks are still legal. We're okay with that. But in the meantime, we need to have national concealed carry reciprocity. And for some reason or another, the for-profit media, at least, is, and I watched more of it last week than I'm accustomed to watching, because, by God, it was either Fox or CNN was on the TV in every office we walked into, and we walked into a bunch. And they're all talking bump stocks. And nobody's saying, well, Bill, wait just a goddamn minute. What about this national reciprocity for concealed carry they're talking about here? That's what they want in return. What do you think about that, Bill? That conversation was not had. And that's a terrifying conversation. There are states in this union, and God knows the NRA has a list of them. And by the way, every day, Monday through Thursday, we had occasion to drive into D.C. on I-66 and to drive out of D.C. on I-66. And going in every day and coming back every day, I stuck my arm out the window with a great big middle finger as I passed NRA headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia. It takes a lot of courage, doesn't it? No, not at all. But it just sits right there by the interstate. And for the life of me, I cannot understand why a liberal infrastructure that can take to the streets for other issues can't figure out a way to get about 20,000 people around National Rifle Association headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia. It ain't hard to find. And it's not even particularly inconvenient. Is it easier to just rally on the mall? What we need is a serious sit-in at the NRA headquarters. Nobody comes in, nobody goes out. It would not look good for them. I guess maybe fear is a part of it. That they're afraid the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals of the NRA, being the domestic terrorists that they are, would start murdering people for having the temerity to object to our country being held hostage by a domestic terror organization. Not sure. Don't think so. Marty asks, isn't NRA HQ a gun-free zone? Well, I know that when they have their conventions, they're gun-free zones. You can't bring... Nope. You cannot bring a gun into an NRA convention meeting because Wayne LaPierre is a chicken shit. And probably nobody knows better than the NRA how much danger attaches to having a whole bunch of drunk Cletuses walking around at a convention packing heat and taking it into the convention hall. I mean, you know, they could just stumble or fumble or bumble, and their freedom protector falls out of their pants, hits the concrete floor of the convention hall, goes off, and for all we know, could, you know, plug Wayne LaPierre right between his two beady little verminous rodent-like eyes. Well, thank you. Thank you, GK. Subject line, you're number one. Bob, that made my evening. Fuck the NRA. Well, yes. But just to sort of return to the thesis, the part that has gone missing in all of this, they tipped their hand, the NRA did. What they want, and what they've been wanting, and what they yearn for, and what there's a substantial likelihood they will get is national reciprocity for concealed carry. And like I said a few minutes ago, there are states, and the NRA knows who they are, that are not fond of the idea of concealed carry and who have more stringent regulations for concealed carry permits than showing up at the sheriff's office with a pulse. And this is a sort of camel's nose under the tent approach that the NRA has developed. Because, you know, let's say Cletus from West Virginia, who can concealed carry without any permit whatsoever, okay? And there are other states like this, too. Let's say Cletus wants to concealed carry on the streets of Washington, D.C. Well, under concealed carry reciprocity, Cletus can, even though Cletus has never demonstrated the first iota, the first itsy bitsy baby little lick of competence with his freedom protector. And hey, my friends in New York City, you're going to just love it if Cletus from no permit required concealed carry comes up and starts walking the streets of old New York with a little heat tucked into his waistband of his skinny jeans. Nah, I'm kidding. There's no self-respecting redneck down here who would ever be caught dead wearing skinny jeans. And not willingly in New York. But, you know, it can happen. And see, if they get concealed carry reciprocity, the game is over. And it's kind of been over anyway, because we quit talking about guns a long time ago. And I don't mean to be a nattering nabob of negativity or anything, but I don't see, barring a substantial change in the Congress, to wit, you know, complete majorities in both houses on the parts of the Democrats and a whole lot of whipping into shape of those majorities, I don't see anything being done about these firearms. Well, okay, not that Cletus. Steve from Georgia Stan notes, Cletus would never conceal carry. She lacks the opposable thumbs. Well, Cletus is a good puppy. She's a very good girl. But we have Cleti here who would. Arthur pointing out, note to Robert in Australia, gun laws are no good because bad guys will never follow the law. So it's not the laws that are working in Australia. They're just not as violent and freedom-loving as us or something. I know, Arthur. But watch that. That's the discussion that will happen. That's the discussion we're going to be allowed to have in this country as long as that discussion leads to giving the NRA its way. Because they told us in their statement, they called for concealed carry reciprocity on a national level. Bubba from Mississippi Stan, for some reason or another, wants to go to California. By God, he can walk right down Rodeo Dam Drive with a hog leg just under his jean jacket. So, again, I want to have a national discussion about firearms. And I don't want that discussion to be controlled by the NRA. And, you know, Dana Lush and that stinky guy, can both shut them up as far as I'm concerned, because they have no solutions. And yes, there are solutions here. It ain't the bump stocks, okay? The idea that somehow or another that there was this line that could be crossed that, well, okay, when 20 children and teachers got it, that wasn't the line. But hey, 59 dead people and 500 plus wounded and injured, okay, now we can have a chat. That is absolutely bullshit. And hey, a couple of other things. We want background checks, right? Background check wouldn't have slowed down Stephen Paddock. Would have passed it with flying colors. Yeah. And you can buy bump stocks at gun shows, and you can buy bump stocks at gun stores. I'm not saying that's not me saying laws never work. No, no, no. We not only don't need assault rifles in civilian hands, we need all the assault rifles out of civilian hands. Let's be clear. I want to be clear about my position on that, because the next Stephen Paddock is out there. And as Randy and PA pointed out to me a little bit ago, he said, radio host Carell on Progressive Voices knew reportedly at least three friends who were at the concert, and they said there were two shooters and two holes in the window a distance apart. Oh, Gewalt. The windows were in the same suite, and he moved between them. I've also seen where people said, well, Stephen Paddock is the same crisis actor as Gary Rosen from Newtown. And I went, oh, Jesus, not this again. But yes, this again. Randy says, I didn't really go all Alex Jones-ish there, because the real Alex Jones covered all of his bases by reaching into every possible conspiracy theory to explain it. It took almost no time at all before Alex Jones declared that it was a false flag operation. Because that's his job now. Declare. Wait a minute. Domino's didn't get me my pizza within 30 minutes or less. False flag. Yeah. So we do need... We need background checks at gun shows. Yes. We need to stop selling AR-15s and semi-automatic assault rifles. And we need to have a buyback program and criminalize anybody that hangs on to them afterward. Double check. We desperately need those. We probably should have a limitation on how many firearms you can buy in a given year. Because one of the things that would accomplish would be to lessen the number of firearms that are going into those places the NRA talks about all the time, like, you know, Chicago and Detroit. Chicago and Detroit, Chicago in particular, doesn't have the gun problem it has because of people buying guns in Chicago. Chicago has the gun problems it has because you can buy almost unlimited amounts of guns, if not actually unlimited amounts of guns, in downstate Illinois and up in Wisconsin. So there are multiple remedies. Meanwhile, Scott, speaking for Punky, says, subject line, bump stocks. A semi-automatic assault rifle isn't all that accurate to begin with. It's no biggie. It needn't be accurate. Like major fast food burger joints, volume is key. P.S. says, Scott, I'd be interested in reading the copy he used in his ads and gun journals to market these things. I'm sure it's out there. Yes, yes, Anatole, you're right. And in Taliban, Indiana. So yeah, we need background checks. We need to limit access to military grade firearms, and we've got to find the courage to do it, regardless of what the domestic terrorists in that mirrored glass cube building in Fairfax, Virginia, say. I'm the NRA and I vote. By the way, the Nazis were back in Charlottesville this weekend. Did you know that? With their tiki torches. March lasted about 15 minutes, but Richard Spencer said, we're coming back, and we're going to keep coming back, and we're going to come back some more. Heil Hitler, y'all. Michael in Madison says, yeah, you're forgetting Indiana, Chicago gun problem. Oh, there's just so many places that the damn guns can come from. And, of course, the damn guns go to Detroit from places like West Virginia and Virginia and Ohio. Makes it kind of hard to, yeah. Brother Deacon Asa says, the question being, why is Trump conducting all these false flag operations to take away your guns, Alex? That. But I say, yeah, we need background checks, and yes, we need to limit access to eliminate access to military style semi-automatic rifles. Yes, we absolutely do. But even those are half measures. I'm going to bring up something I brought up before. And that is insurance. An insurance actuary can calculate the risk for just about anything and then attach a dollar value to it. Requiring, and this is the neat part, requiring insurance for firearm owners would not run afoul of the Second Amendment. Mm-mm. Everybody got to carry liability insurance for harm caused by the operation of a firearm. Intentional or negligent. I mean, you could even argue that while he was intentionally slaughtering people, Stephen Paddock was, you know, not exercising the care and caution that a reasonable, prudent firearm owner would exercise. And the more guns you own, the more you have to pay. And you pay based upon the type of firearm you own, too. If it's capable of unleashing mass death because of the number of rounds it can accommodate, you pay more. And while we're at it, yes, psychological examinations. Because even the people that we trust to carry and use firearms as they deem necessary, namely law enforcement, have proven not to be particularly good at it. A little something happened here in West Virginia over the weekend. It's It's one of those stories where it's going to be hard to work up, I guess, a lot of sympathy. But a guy up in Clay County had started seeing another lady in Clay County, had started seeing a lady in Clay County. Not another lady, just a lady, a woman. And he had a son who was apparently not mentally healthy and had a history, it was reported, of drug problems. Well, I guess it was Saturday when the young man went to the woman's home out near I-79 and the Clay-Roan line and killed her. And then he took her Volkswagen SUV and led police on a high-speed chase down the interstate and through the mean streets of Charleston, West Virginia. Eventually, he crashed his vehicle into a motel there downtown. Police said that he had periodically brandished a shotgun out the window of the vehicle which he had stolen and was driving. Of course, had he tried to fire that shotgun single-handed while driving, it probably would have leapt out of his hands and he would have hit nothing. But he had brandished the shotgun, and so when he crashed the car into the side of the motel, the police exited their vehicles and summarily executed him. Because I guess that's what you do. But these are people who had had psychological testing to make sure that they were okay to carry and use firearms and were trained to use them. We still don't have a whole lot of information on how Stephen Paddock got so damn good at calculating and executing the mass murder that he perpetrated. There's nobody out there who said, well, you know, he came out to the range and he liked to shoot long distances. No, we get stories about him carrying a cigar to blow smoke back in the faces of cigarette smokers that he didn't like. And we got the story about how he wired $100,000 to the Philippines, where his presumably for his girlfriend. We got some stories about him being possibly domestically violent toward her. And, of course, we all now know that's one of those things that sets off the flashing lights and the bells and the whistles and the sirens. Domestic abusers quite often turn into killers. But, you know, he's a white guy. And so we're going to be hard-pressed to call him a terrorist. We're going to be hard-pressed to... And everybody seems to be falling back on the idea that he was insane, because you got to be crazy to do something like that. Although he seems quite cool and quite measured and quite downright perfunctory in the way he went about putting his plan into motion. Oh, and by the way, one last thing. In the immediate aftermath, or the hours most immediate to this horrible crime, and I refer to it as a crime because it was, of course, if it had been perpetrated by a brown or black person, or someone with a funny sounding name, it would be terrorism. It's not terrorism, of course, because a white guy did it. A couple of organizations immediately jumped out to try to assign blame ideological blame. One website, one right-wing website, and this all falls under the banner of fake news. One website, right-wing website, tried to make him into a liberal. And because of the way that Google's algorithms work, it got as much coverage as actual news stories. From actual news organizations. And so did the news story from another website. A website which runs a radio network. I heard it for the first time as I was driving out of D.C. on, I guess, Thursday afternoon. Lots of talk about the deep state and various sorts of things that I've grown accustomed to. This website published an article, absolutely factually incorrect, untrue, and inaccurate, stating that the shooter was a Muslim. Show of hands, because this is just like Romper Room. Because, you know, we've got the doobie and everything. No, I wish I had the doobie. Show of hands, if anybody knows what the website was that immediately blamed the shooting on a Muslim. Anybody? Okay. Well, Four-chan was one of the websites. That's a right-wing cesspool. And then there was that other website. And it's, like I said, it's the same website that has a radio network. Guess who? Google and Facebook and the New York Times pointed out that Facebook's trending stories highlighted a piece of bullshit information published by, drumroll please, Sputnik. That Sputnik. Propaganda arm of the Russian government owned by a skeevy Russian billionaire, Sputnik. Absolutely bogus post claiming that the FBI had already put blame for the slaughter on Muslim terrorists. Yep, Sputnik. That's Sputnik. The one that's the sponsor of a whole bunch of allegedly progressive radio programs. That's Sputnik. Yep. Haven't heard anybody saying, they don't want anything to do with, that sort of conduct. Nope. Sorry. Just thought you might find that interesting. So we still have no answers. We may not have answers. He may have, Stephen Paddock may have done an excellent job of leaving no fingerprints, as it were. He may just be an enigma with a whole lot of firepower. Yeah. But, you know, we're not sponsored by Sputnik. Sputnik isn't cutting a check to keep the horn on the air. What keeps the horn on the air is the members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. And Shirley's Memorial Challenge is on the table this evening, as is a $300 Have a Show on Me Challenge, courtesy of Matt in San Francisco, in memory of his recently departed dear sister Constance. I can tell you that at 13 minutes before 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, we have no responses to either challenge. So, having filibobstered for an hour and 47 minutes, and my humble apologies for doing that, but we haven't even gotten to any of the other stuff. This is what happens when I go away for a week and I have lots of time to sit and think. Or walk and think, or drive and think. I wish I had a solution. I wish I felt more confident about the ability of our elected representatives to come to a solution. But I don't. All we can do is hope. And we know what you can hope in one hand and do in the other and see which one fills up fastest. But if we can meet those two challenges, and thanks very kindly for everybody who makes those challenges possible. Well, if we can meet those two challenges, we will have caught up with everything and be out of the hole for not only all of last week, but tonight as well. 500 dollars worth of challenges on the table. We can raise that in one night, but it has to get started. Somebody has to start it. So thank you to everybody who keeps this program on the air. Thank you ever so kindly. And as promised, as a memorial for Constance, a little bumper music, because as Matt put it, this song speaks to my wounded soul that's coming to terms with her leaving this dimension too soon. So we'll take a break and come back to calls and conversations on topics of your choosing. This is listener-supported conversation radio. It's More and Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I watch clouds roll overhead. No, it's me that moves instead. Round, round, round. Clouds of faces I can see. I can see they're seeing me. I can tell 'cause we know each other well. We know each other well. Angels, angels, I hear them in the trees. I wish that one. I pay you for your songs. Can I go? Can I go?
Track was Angels, and that is in memory of Matt's sister, Constance, who passed away last week of pancreatic cancer. I speak for the entire Horn Family Community Congregation, Matt, when I say that our hearts are with you. And thanks very kindly to Darlene in Connecticut. For jumping out and taking care of $100 of the challenges on the table, only 400 to go. 10 at 40, 40 at 10, 4 at 100, 8 at 50, and the rest of the cipher in gazettas. So thank you, Darlene, for getting us started. Thank you very, very kindly. And by the way, yes, in regard to last month, we managed it, we licked the Lithuanian, we nudged the Norsky, and we did, in fact, cash the check. That happened before October the 1st hit, so thank you one and all for making that happen. Randy points out, you really can't make modern sense of the combined two clauses of the Second Amendment. The Supreme Court tried years ago and came to the conclusion that the National Guard in each state most closely resembled a well-regulated militia. Yeah, and then in the Heller decision, Fat Dead Tony Scalia just said, "Ah, screw that part. That's the same as a flourish under a guy's signature. That whole well-regulated militia, it doesn't mean anything. Everybody." And then Fat Dead Tony turned into sort of Oprah Winfrey with a gun. You get a gun. You get a gun. You get a bump stock and an AK-47. You get a bump stock and an AR-15. You get to slaughter 600 people. Oh, it's almost enough to make you wish he wasn't dead so that he could have been around to see the bloody harvest that he had helped to sow. Nah, no. I'm still glad Fat Dead Tony's fat and dead. Yes, indeed. And thank you, Colin, for keeping it going. Thank you very kindly. We are making progress on these two challenges. And, in the next hour and 5 minutes, we might just knock it down. Thank you, Colin.
And, hey, it's Arnold with us. Haven't heard from Arnold in a while. That's the wrong button, too. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm here. How about you? Actually, I'm tickled.
I'm here.
I'm tickled pink to be back. Who am I kidding? You know D.C.
Yeah, no, I do. And, I like it for about the first 15 minutes or so, and then I can't wait to get out of there. Here's why I called, if I could jump right to it. You were talking before the break, about the shooting. I've been hearing from some people I trust, some of the stuff that Randy mentioned about, you hear from this person and that person, this conspiracy, that conspiracy, multiple gunmen and all this. And I understand where people get the idea that maybe it's a false flag, not this event necessarily, but I understand why we can go on the false flag narrative. We do know certain historical events were not all they were cracked up to be, right? And we don't have to start naming them off because I'm not putting on a tinfoil hat right now. I'm kind of just trying to make sense out of what we're living through now. What I'm saying is, why is it that every single event becomes an alleged false flag? Why are we so willing to let these people into our midst? Like, why do we not just let the investigations happen and then a while down the road?
Well, can I take a run at that?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, one, there's a 24-hour news cycle to fill. And so even under the most responsible of circumstances, some speculation is going to leak in. That's one. Two, it's a 24-hour news cycle. Content, content, content. I mean, I can hear the gunfire from the constant replaying of that video footage. It's embedded in my brain. It's like, I make jokes about, being an old disc jockey and hearing songs in my head and everything. Well, I can hear that in my head, too.
I understand. Yep.
Secondly, how do they get to be false flags or how does that creep into our consciousness?
Well,
on the one hand, almost immediately, Alex Jones was out there screaming false flag. And, of course, he's paid well to scream it, so he screams it extra loud.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's over, at least I hope it's over, on the right. I'd like to hope that there's nobody out there on our side of the discussion that pays any attention to anything that man says, because if they do, they're probably drinking paleo chocolate chicken bone juice drink and it just turns my stomach thinking about it.
It's not that I haven't heard it from any left media outlets per se, but what I've heard, where I've seen it is on social media from people who I think are relatively smart or relatively aware of where they're gathering news and or content from. And, I've asked a handful of people and they all feel like I do, where it's a real deal, and it's a real thing to be freaked out about, but it wasn't a false flag. And I don't want to be duped like anybody else. I like to be able to look at situations and say, I call BS on that. But from the minute I started hearing about this particular event, it didn't sound like a fake event. It sounded like something that was horrible and shouldn't be happening, but was likely just a madman.
Well, I mean, I can confess, when I saw the first video footage, the first images, and I saw those two windows broken out in the hotel room, and it looked like there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and there was a turn in the my first. Oh well, there were two people shooting. People shooting. But that's a logical fallacy, and let me go way far afield by way of explaining how. Christmas season will be upon us before we know it, and the war on Christmas and everything. By the way,
right.
The EPA administrator declared that the war on coal is over today.
Yeah, that's maddening, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought of you immediately when I read that. I said to myself, I wonder what Bob's going to say about the war on coal being over.
Well, it ain't, because they're still waging war on innocent human beings, but there we go. But secondly, so Christmas is coming. Answer me this, Arnold. How many wise men were there?
Three?
And how do we know there were three wise men?
Because it's written down. No, actually, we don't really, right? We have no idea
how many wise men there were, but we assume there were three. The three show up in the crash and whatever, because of the gifts that were brought, gold and frankincense and myrrh. Three gifts, three guys.
Right.
So, but there's
could've
nothing.
Could have been three chicks. Could have been one dude carrying a bunch of stuff.
It could have been the Babylonian marching wise men. Okay, I mean it could have been a whole goddamn band. But you know, gold and frankincense and myrrh. So had to be three, because three things are named. Well, that's the same intellectual process I went through when I saw two windows.
That's fair.
But I think
if they're on the same floor, if they're in the same suite, within a few minutes, you can discount, if there's no evidence of a second gunman, you can discount in the room anyway, like no body or, you know, no one's escaped on surveillance footage or anything. You know, you've been to a casino like that, right? Maybe not in Vegas, but
I've been to a casino hotel in Vegas. Yes.
Okay. So you know, like anybody who's been through that in the last 20 years, those things are wired with cameras. They're in the elevators. I mean, there's cameras literally on you everywhere all the time, except for maybe the bathroom. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the bathrooms too, quite frankly.
Counting cards, definitely counting cards in the bathroom.
Yeah. Well, I had an experience in Atlantic City on an elevator where I realized, you know, because I'm visually impaired, so I don't catch everything maybe, you know, that I would if I had good vision. But I didn't realize that the elevators had the cameras that they do. And I had a situation in an elevator and talked to a security guard later on. I mean, and they saw the entire – I mean, they saw the entirety of every – I mean, just literally everything in fine detail. So I'm assuming that there's going to be video of this whole situation. I could be wrong. And that's one of the false flag things people are saying. Oh, there's no video. Well, I'm sure at some point, right, there has to be a release of whatever footage from the hotel, right? Elevated traffic, parking garage, all that stuff, right?
Yeah. But it doesn't mean much. Because if he's just another guy carrying in luggage and he's living there for 3 weeks.
Yep.
So what?
I mean, I've brought a lot of audio and video equipment in and out of hotels. And
that's,
you know,
two
no
of
one
us.
Cares, no one cares what's in your bag. I mean, and frankly, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about getting a hotel room. You're renting space. So in a polite, you know, quote unquote polite society, I rent a room from you. I bring in my gear. I live in that space as if it's my own for that period of time. And, you know, I don't think anybody would think anything of a guy rolling a case up the hall. People go to gun shows all the time. So even if there were rifle cases, that's not going to raise suspicion.
It's
because,
Nevada.
Exactly.
And if you're bringing in one gun case at a time, it's going to be, and this, you know, this guy had plans. You know, the one piece of writing that he left was not a note, not a manifesto. He was calculating angles. So he thought this thing through quite thoroughly. So you probably, you know, as he was bringing in the firearms, he never brings it in at any time where there's a likelihood of the same security guy watching the cameras sees the same thing happen enough to make him go, hey, this guy's got a lot of luggage.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I'm not, and you know, when I got to thinking about the two windows aspect of it, well, yeah, it makes sense. You know, let's say they start shooting at, for some reason or another, they start shooting at your one hole, you go over and shoot out of the two hole.
Right, right. And maybe he theorized they were going to send the chopper up. You know, I mean, you know, you play enough Grand Theft Auto or any other war-like game, you know, you start thinking in these kind of, you know, movie kind of mindset, right? You know, how are they going to come get me? Well, maybe they'll send a helicopter up. So, that, you know, multiple exits, you know, multiple locations for him to retreat.
Well, we've seen Die Hard have
yeah,
it,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
The helicopter, yeah. And Yippee-ki-yay, and right?
What's the one I'm thinking of? It might be the Marlboro Man one where they do the crazy thing with the helicopter in the window. I don't know, I'm probably wrong about that.
I just remember the helicopter in the first Die Hard. But all of those things, you know, all those things play together, and then you know, Arnold, I think there's a human desire for things to make sense,
right.
if that in itself makes any sense. We see slaughter on that level, and because we don't, you know, look. If you lived in one of the places where the United States has made illegal war in the last 20 years, you would not have any problem whatsoever realizing that one person could do this.
Yes.
But if you're Jane and Joe Sixpack, and you've just got a closet full of guns because, you know, they're liquid and they're fungible and you come from a gun culture and things like that,
that's the part that scares me, Bob. Like, you know, I can easily make fun of that whole culture. I can even do a pretty good accent. The thing that gets me really scared is that these people actually believe on a level that they're doing the right thing by hoarding all this crap. I don't think that if a family who lives on like a farm, if they have an AR-15 that's a semi-automatic, I don't necessarily care they have one of them and they target shoot with it in their from a gun culture. Where I get kind of bent up is the kid's got one, the father's got one, mommy's got one, you know, sis got a pink one.
Well,
you know,
sure, and not just that, Arnold. What we don't like, I mean, our gun culture is exceptionally American, right? American exceptionalism,
yeah, yeah.
Gun culture. But if you look, you know, we use words like tribal when we describe gun cultures in, say, Afghanistan, where mom's got a gun and dad's got a gun and the kids got a gun and the cousins have guns. No. See, that's not freedom. Okay, those are barbarian savages.
You mean the guys that can make the guns out of almost out of nothing? There's a whole Afghan culture in Afghanistan of gunsmithing that I would put a lot of Americans to shame. You can't go whip out your credit card and buy one. They'd start knocking them together, and they made their own tools and
right. But see,
and
they
stuff.
Don't. But they don't have freedom, and they don't have a whole. And I'm moving into sarcasm, and that's probably not a good thing. But you know, they don't have a holy sacred Second Amendment.
Yeah, which by the way, my interpretation of the Second Amendment is basically. I believe it was constructed to help in the sense of not having. I think the founders were hoping to not have a standing army, and the concept of having a way of having an armed populace that was not a threat to anybody, but a actual threat to the country.
Right,
and
among other things, you know, because they templated the rest of the government on ancient Republican Rome. Well, ancient Republican Rome's armies were citizen soldiers who were called up away from their plows, and they supplied their own armor, they supplied their own swords, they supplied their own spears. They did amazing things. That army. And
you'll
was...
hear people say it's for tyranny. It's to protect against tyranny. Well, you know, there's a certain level that I can go down that road, but you know, you're not going to defend against tyranny with a 30-odd six against a helicopter gunship. You're just not. It's not going to happen.
No, so or a Hellfire missile for that matter.
Right.
But the thing is, you know, there were limitations, or there were positive, there were demands made of these militia members in the early days of the United States. A person had to prove that they were competent with the weapon. A person had to prove that they by law they had to keep a certain amount of shot and patches and powder.
Yep.
And lead. In order to make that so-called well-regulated militia functional. And then there was the well-regulated part, where you had to get called out and go march up and down the square and shoot it and show that you could load and fire. And by the way, the reason that didn't work out so well is it proved not to be very efficient in what was then deemed the modern world. Okay?
Right, exactly.
When James Madison ill-advisedly declared war on Great Britain, stupid, we found out real fast how bad they were, because a bunch of pissed off Canadians, some of whom had been run out of the fledgling United States in the immediate aftermath of the revolution, came down and, you know, burnt Washington.
Oops.
Yeah, you don't fuck with the Canadians. They're all nice and everything until they're not.
Well, and that's the thing. Have you ever heard the expression, don't piss off nice people?
Absolutely.
You know, because there's this, and I actually, someone told it to me, and I wasn't actually familiar with that, and someone said, well, I would never piss you off. And I said, why? And they said, well, because you're a nice person. And he said to me, he goes, you never piss off a nice person, because they get you savage. And I giggled, because I then realized, you know, yeah.
I like the idea of you giggling, Arnold, but that's okay. See, you did.
I did.
Well, okay, so I got a note here from Terrace.
Okay.
The perfect disguise is a white man suit. He says, hi, Bob. Security guards saw the shooter take all those bags into his room. They saw themselves. In other words, they saw nothing.
I'll actually take that a step further. I would say that even if they were black or Latino security guard, they're conditioned to tolerate white privilege or allow white privilege in the sense that, you know, it's normalized. It's like, oh, some old white dude with a bunch of cases. You know, it's a non-issue. You know, now if he had been a Sikh or something, you know, God help him.
Right, because it's all about our presuppositions, and I think that sort of folds back, Arnold, into your question as to how we get duped into this stuff.
Real quick, and it scares me because these people have guns and everything else, and they're talking like, you know, oh, the government, you know, it's another lie, it's another false flag, and it actually kind of scares me that, you know, a third of the population or 25% of the population is just the plumb crazy stupid.
30 to 35%, absolutely. And you know what? That 30 to 35% absolutely cannot be counted on to help in any way with regard to the problems that things like this massacre expose.
Yeah.
And secondly, and you can tell me, because I had a cold shiver run down me when I realized that there are literally probably and literally are different. There are probably in excess of 100,000 of these bump stocks attached to semi-automatic rifles in this country.
And you see,
he said he expected to sell 1,000 a year, and he sold 1,000 in the first month.
Wow.
And then, and the thing is, free market, you make something, and the something you make works really well.
Yeah, everybody copies it.
Well,
does their own.
you're probably gonna make out okay.
Yep.
And he got a patent on it and everything. And so, I mean, long before this happened, you know, my son was talking to me because he talks with the with kids, and they all know what a bump stock is.
See, I had no idea. I have no idea. You know, I didn't know you could take a semi-automatic rifle and make it basically automatic with illegally. See, the whole thing used to be that some of the AKs and AR-15s and stuff had fully automatic hardware that you could purchase, but it was totally illegal.
Yeah.
And then I heard through some law enforcement acquaintances that if you spend about $12,000, you can actually buy some kind of federal permit.
Yes.
Where you can own an automatic weapon.
$12,000 to $18,000, and it takes about a year, and then you get your machine gun. Which now, you know, why, Arnold? Why does that law exist? What need is there for any American?
There is none. You know,
I mean, I'm not being sarcastic, and it's not a rhetorical question. If you can explain to me why, say, oh, I don't know, moron Bundy.
Oh yeah, no need at all. Was he going to kill all his cows in a couple minutes? Like there's no.
I mean, are the coyotes out there roving in packs of 500?
Are they 6 feet tall?
So I mean, I'm hard pressed to know why it's. And the thing is, and then there's automatic firearms made before 1985, and you can just have those.
Oh really?
If I understand correctly, yes.
Oh, that's beautiful. You see, and now, but wait, and we have states, and you know, this go. I start to get all bent out of shape because I start to go, you know, go all over the road here. But solar energy is illegal in some places.
Yes, I know.
You can't live off the grid, Florida. Like what? So we can own an automatic weapon, but we can't have clean energy. Like what?
I mean, right. You can own an automatic weapon to shoot out your neighbors. Dangerous terrorist solar panels.
Solar panels. That's good. I like that one.
You're not asking any. And I want to go back, you know, to what I was saying about, you know, me and Ferg talking about bump stocks. I mean, this was a month ago, maybe. And I said, so what is that? I said, I don't care about a bump stock. What's a bump stock? He goes, oh. It's a thing you put on the stock of your AR-15. And it fires like a machine gun. I said, those are illegal. He said, no, they're not. He knows people who have them.
My God.
I mean, it's like, I remember when we were talking about the rolling coal diesel modifications,
Yeah.
There are people around here who have that too.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no reason to have it. It's a net negative to have it.
Yes.
But you can have it. And
so I don't mean to cut you off, but so this thing about the bump stocks, right? Yeah. Our neighbors target shoot. You know, everybody around me has, you know, between like 1.5 to 7 acres private farm at type deals. And, you know, some people target shoot into the larger wilderness areas. You know, there's 100 acre here, 200 acres there. They fire into those areas and whatnot. And some of these things are absolutely automatic. And I just figured they had the permit, whatever. But if you can do a modification, you know, relatively inexpensive modification, that explains why I hear so many of them. And it goes back to what you said about why should civilian anybody just – there's no need for any – I feel – and I'm not like a wimp, but I feel kind of vulnerable knowing that people around me within a couple-mile radius have – an automatic weapon. They don't need that. There's no, nothing's going to happen that they need that thing. Nothing. Nothing.
And but see, the response from the NRA to that, well, it's a Second Amendment right. It's a constitutional right. You don't have to have a reason. On the other hand, however, I'll just point out that a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy is a constitutional right. And we have places all over the country where the woman has to show up at the clinic, she has to watch a gory-ass fetus video, has to wait 24 hours, and then come back and get it done. But we don't... Look, I mean, you know what? If you can do that to a woman's constitutional right, then why can't we make a gun owner, or a gun purchaser, I should say, why can't we make that gun purchaser come in, plop down the money, fill out the federal firearms form, and then sit down and watch really gory video of Virginia Tech and Las right. Vegas and Aurora and Tucson and so that they can be absolutely, because remember the rationale for making the woman watch that video is that so she can make an informed decision.
You know, you go when you talk about the video before the purchase, the rational next part to that is anybody that still wants a gun after watching, like, you know, people's heads explode should be checked psychologically.
Should have their head examined. Yes.
So you just watched all that mayhem and you still want that? You still want to be able to cause that? You still want to be able to have that happen by accident for real? You know, and the argument is, oh, many things are dangerous. You know, I can be killed walking across the street. Well, yeah, that's real true. But, you know, you can't be killed walking across the street if you don't walk across the street. A gun can kill somebody being a gun.
And let me raise another issue that I raise every time that one of these things happens, because nobody else raises it, Arnold. I don't hear anybody else asking this question except me. And that's not, you know, that's not me with my little trumpet. You know, fee, lee, lee. No, it's just nobody else. I don't. Maybe people don't think this way. But there is never any follow up after one of these things. So, you know, they'll follow up by going to a funeral and we'll see wreaths laying in front of like a high school or candles lit or something. We get that kind of follow up. For the
pair of cowboy boots on a you know, like a little, like with flowers around it or something, you know. Yeah, you see all those images.
Yeah, okay, but what we never get is the follow-up story about the medical billing nightmare that the survivors live. Okay? Getting shot is just the front end of the disaster for a whole lot of people. Because getting treated for a bullet wound, even if you get winged, is not cheap.
Yeah.
If there's substantial damage and there's surgeries involved, multiple surgeries, recoveries, rehabilitation, all of that. And heaven forbid your life your quality of life is changed beyond the esoteric.
Do they recover the lead or not? You know, all that stuff.
Yeah, there's never a news story about how much the hospital bill was. There's never a news story about what happens to the person who has no insurance and gets shot.
That's actually a really good one, because, you know, the first thing, because I'm kind of naive, I would just assume that the building's insurance would cover, you know, the venue's insurance. I mean, that's why venues have to have a liability insurance, I would think, for situations like this.
Well, but what's the venue? I mean, which one covers? I mean, that's a legal nightmare. There's got to be lawyers involved. You got to hire a lawyer. You participate in litigation. And that's a, you know, that's a 4, 5, 10 year sojourn in hell.
Yes.
And whose insurance is it? Is it the venue where people were at the concert, or is it the Mandalay Bay, or is it both? Or is it joint and several liability where you sue them all and let God sort them out? But the thing is, even insurance policies have limits. Okay, there's no such thing as an open-ended insurance policy.
Yep.
So you got I'm just guessing here. Your counsel for the Mandalay Bay.
Right.
You've already written a letter to your insurance carrier saying, Buster, you better tender policy limits right now. And if the insurance company is smart, they run to the court and they implead the policy limits into the court and says, you know, somebody's going to come after this. We're done. Okay, we've done our part. And there aren't that many insurance companies that are actually that smart, because they'll fight over a goddamn nickel.
No, they'll fight over. They'll literally argue over very small amounts of money.
But then it's still up to the victim to go and get it, and to prove that they and to prove enough liability to warrant getting it. On the other hand, you know, if I'm defense counsel at the venue, we got nothing here. We got no exposure. We were putting on a country music festival. This is unforeseeable. Now, it's also America, Arnold, so the minute you say this is unforeseeable, plaintiff's counsel sitting at the other table going, unforeseeable, this is America, this happens all the fucking time.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is there's no surefire answer. And even if you've got insurance, if you've got what is typical in the United States, 80-20, if you're... You know, your catastrophic coverage is 80-20 up to a certain level, right. And then boom, you're 100% covered. You're still going to have $10, $15, $20, $40, $100,000 worth of medical bills.
For going to a rock show. Yeah, it's totally insane. And, you know, the problem with, you mentioned it before, with the gun owners not having liability insurance. I mean, just simple liability insurance. You purchase a gun, you have to have a policy like having a car, and states could figure out, or the federal government could figure out what minimum liability is. I mean, you got to start evaluating life and stuff and doing things that are creepy, but you have to figure out what minimum liability is going to be. And I think that would really, you know, you buy the gun, you get insurance, and if you don't want to carry insurance, you can't keep the firearm. Pretty much that simple, I think.
Or if God forbid something awful happens and your insurance is lapsed or you're not carrying the coverage, into jail, buddy.
Yep. Or jail works because we do that.
And you don't get to own no guns no more because you have actively forfeited your constitutional right. Just like you do, because see, if you make the non-coverage a felony, then you're a convicted felon, and you can't have the goddamn guns in the first place.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. And that's how, you know, and so there is, you know, quickly, the solutions are right there. First of all, I just, you know, I was trying not to curse tonight, but...
Nah, go ahead.
People that run around with guns are basically pussies. And whether you're a guy or a girl, it's basically, everybody knows what I mean. You're basically a pussy. Now, if you do night drops for your company or you have some other legitimate reason for having, you know, a pistol or something reasonable, I'm not saying anything negative about that. But this whole, like...
No, but I'm too chicken shit to go to Walmart without a hog leg on my hip. Uh-uh. No.
No, I'm not into that at all. I'm tired of it. I'm flat out tired of it. I see people carrying where we live, and I'm like, yo, really? Yeah, you know, no one's coming after you, man. Trust me. You know, you don't got anybody, nothing anybody wants.
But don't forget, there's also a race angle wrapped into this too.
They've been made afraid by Fox News too, Bob. I mean,
right, right, and Fox News has done it in conjunction with Wayne LaPierre, who says things like, you know, these are dark times in America. Okay? That's code. Come on, please.
Most violent crime in 40 years. It's the worst time in America.
These are dark days. And you know, there's always the heavy-handed, the heavy music and the creepy lighting and it's always somebody in the dark. You know, I saw some security ad the other day on TV for, you know, install your own home security. And lo and behold, there, you know, the lights come on and the black guy runs away. God bless America. It's so obvious. And by the way, part of the reason I think that the NRA made its bullshit fake concession that it would allow us to talk about something is because of the nature of this particular event. Because see, there is nothing a good guy with a gun could have done.
Nothing. Maybe they could have got their heat-seeking missile, $5,000 drone, and flew it up into the window. You know, like, so I'm waiting for that. For the, you know, next thing is, you know, you don't need a gun, you need a heat-seeking missile armed personal drone.
Yeah.
Good guy with a missile armed drone.
Right. And see, this is where capitalism runs headlong into our firearm fetish. So now is the, I mean, can you imagine what the Mandalay Bay would say if we told them, look, you can't rent out any of the rooms that overlook that venue whenever there's a concert there. Sorry. Wait a minute. That cuts into our profits. What about our precious little shareholders?
Right. Well, then you have to make sure you have metal detectors, and you got to make sure that people can't get crossbows in there. And, you know, I mean, let's go down the line.
And I hate to even say anything like this, but I saw others saying it in the aftermath. You know, that I think I saw Carol Baker say it, Matt Osborne as well. If something like this ever happens to me, you have my this is your explicit permission to politicize the hell out of it.
Oh yeah, have at it, man. If I'm ever tied up in anything like that, go for it. Have at it.
Yeah, drain the. You're gonna do it anyway. Drain the blood out of my body. And dump it on your nearest NRA member.
Exactly. Exactly. Because it's time to be rational about this whole thing. If we want to have a polite society, if we want to have, you know, car loans and mortgages and credit cards and, you know, go to church and go to work, if we want to have life, go to the grocery store, there's no place for everybody to be armed. I don't really want to be in a grocery store full of, you know, everybody has a gun. You know, if a handful of people in the whole place have guns for legitimate reasons, you know, I don't care. But if everybody's armed, that's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know? I'm not trying to be like militant or anything, but I watch cops when the cops are around, I watch them.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, loud noise, bang.
Right.
What does our buddy Joy say? Oops, blam, pray.
No, but listen, when, you know, I had a friend share a picture on social media the other day. He was in a grocery store and he came around the corner and there was like five of them interacting with somebody. And he took a picture of the interaction. He was prepared to run video, you know, because we're so everybody's afraid of what is about to happen, like all around them, you know, at any moment. And I blame media on the right for stoking all that emotion and cranking, especially old white people, cranking them right up. And that's the people that I interact with who are the most scared are the old white, you know, Fox viewer, listener.
But please understand that while that's the sort of typification that we often apply, it ain't entirely accurate, Arnold.
What do you mean?
I mean, there's the youngins out there. Again, my son knows about bump stocks because there's a lot of young people out there who, with their first paycheck, went out and bought themselves an AR-15. Because it makes their little todgers all you know, stiff in their whatevers.
So we're a couple hundred miles away from each other, but it's amazing to me how much where I live is like West Virginia, because I know some kids. I guess they're over 18 now, but I know one individual was into archery, and then the father bought him an AR-15 for target shooting. And I said to the father, "That's a hell of a gun to target shoot with." And he's like, "Oh, that's what the boy wanted."
Then he didn't know shit from Shinola about target shooting.
That's what I mean. Like, you know, what are you doing? But it's because you know, they want that weapon of war. You know, they can get a military gun without being in the
military.
That's what they get
when they. Oh God! Oh, I'm about to say it. I'm going to hate myself, and I'll probably get email. That's what they're used to having in their hands in video games. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, if you're in a video game and you're shooting a bolt action rifle, you're running around looking for the upgrade till you can get a machine gun.
Yep. I like Grand Theft Auto now and then. I have a week. I like driving the little vehicles around and stuff. And the truth is, if you do any of the missions, quote unquote, in the game, If you go at them with the gun they want you to use, you're dead. So you have to get the upgrade or the cheat or the weapons mod or whatever to be able to. Yeah, no.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be anti-video game, but a lot of them were developed by our military, so with cooperation with our military.
Well, what is it? Call of Duty World War II is about to come out. And my guess is that it probably won't do as well as the modern stuff because you're going to have guys sitting around having to work bolt-action rifles.
Yep, yep.
I mean, you know, even if you look at, okay, so we were talking a good bit in the last couple of a couple of weeks ago about the Vietnam documentary. Look at what the troops in the field are carrying. You know, they don't have long-ass, massive capacity magazines. Sons of bitches jam, for starters.
Right.
They're relatively short, and you pop them into the bottom of the M16, and you go.
Yep.
And if you sit there and you squeeze off, you on full auto, that clip's empty. And so there's this disconnect between the realities of warfare versus what these fetishists, and granted they're a subsection, okay, but they're real. And what these fetishists imagine war to be. And I'm not going to get into the whole psychology of game over and extra. Oh, look, I've got an extra life. Buddy, in the real world, you don't get none of those.
And that's the thing, Bob. I think when the disconnect between the video game and reality becomes real, people don't realize that when they see the, wasted comes up on the screen and it resets, that doesn't happen in real life. You get one time through this mess. And, to end it or to have it ended in a time of gross conflict is probably one of the worst ways to go, especially if you signed up for the military meaning well, and then you get sent over as gunpowder and get killed in action. That's probably the worst way. It's honorable, like we make it honorable, but it's horrible. And if you died being a hero, saving someone from a fire or some kind of emergency, even in war, if you get to be a hero, saving a good guy, bad guy, whoever, saving a life.
Yeah.
Point being that we don't get a second run at this. So to glorify death or the risk of death, or think that you get to kill a bunch of people at a concert venue and then maybe you're going to get away. We're going to live down the beach in this particular afterwards. How do you relax after that?
Right, Arnold. But in this particular case, we're really far afield, and it's not a criticism. We're talking about a 60-something guy with a lot of wealth. I mean, Jesus Christ! You've got two airplanes. You've got a hunting permit in Alaska. If you're a hunter, you've got some of the best hunting. You're allowed to hunt some of the best hunting grounds in the country. You got four houses. You can gamble all you want, and it sounds like he might have had a gambling problem, but that's not for me to judge. There's nothing to indicate that he was working out a gambling problem by doing what he did.
Right. That's not going to help him anyway.
I don't think he hated Jason Aldean or anything, but none of these. No, it is simply a calculus based upon he was able to buy as many guns as he wanted because he could afford as many guns as he wanted, and then he was able to do what he wished with them. It really is that simple. And that's what makes it so damn terrifying.
Yes. And that's why I asked you originally, that's how we got where we came back around to it. And I asked you, how do we get from to these false flag things so quick? Because, it in a couple days' time, it looked pretty clear that it wasn't one. I mean, the guy, like you just said, he could afford to do what he did, and he did it. I mean, basically, that's what it,
and,
that's
and the
what
way
it is.
And the way we get to false flag, specifically, that claim, false flag, is because people have a motive for making that claim. And in the case of Alex Jones, he makes that claim because he is a pathetic little micro dick shill for the NRA. It is to his economic benefit to make that claim and get as many people behind it as they can. The scurrilous, the disgusting, the revolting conduct of people in the aftermath of Sandy Hook. Jesus Christ, how awful! What a terrible attempt at a member of the human race you have to be.
I know
to say the things
crisis.
Those people have said. And then there, but there it was
crisis
on my Facebook
actor.
Page. Crisis actor Gary Rosen is the same as Stephen Paddock. And the photos are, and I've seen it repeatedly, the photos are next to each other. And they just both happen to, you know, their heads are at an angle and they're unshaven. And no, they're not the same person. But there are people who want it to be. Because, see, if it's all a government conspiracy, remember, that means nobody's dead.
That means what do you mean? That the bodies were all fake?
Yeah. They're crisis actors.
See, now this is where I'm going to sound like an asshole, I guess. But I don't think that people have a grip. If it was a false flag, somebody has to be killed. In other words, there's no there if it's all fake. See that's a total. They lose. They completely.
Yeah, but and I'll get and again I'll get to emails, but it goes. You know, I remember when we mistakenly had somebody on this program years and years ago who explained that all of the people who were really on the plane that crashed into the Pentagon weren't really on the plane, and they were just put on a bus somewhere.
I bet you got some email about that one.
Well, I get email because I get email from people telling me that, you know, George Bush planted little black bombs, put on his little black coat and his little black hat and his little black boots and planted little black bombs all over the World Trade Center. But,
you know, see, 9/11 is one of those things where 9/11 is where everybody gets their tinfoil hat on.
Oh, I'd rather go to the dentist without Novocaine than talk about 9/11, Arnold.
You know, kind of I do too, but I think it's one of those things where people get all twisted because there is a lot of what ifs.
Remember there was that book,
Patriot Act.
I can't remember the author's name right now, and it should be on the tip of my tongue. But it's called. He wrote a seminal book called "The Paranoid Style in American Politics," and he could have very easily just expanded it to "The Paranoid Style in American Culture," because mm-hmm. we landed on the moon and there were immediately people going, "No, we didn't. That was all a Hollywood production."
Right.
And
they made it in England.
and you know, in a way, I think it traces back to the Kennedy assassination, because. You just can't get a lot of buy-in on the lone on the Lee Harvey Oswald did it by himself theory, the magic bullet, and
now,
all of that crap.
This is the thing with Kennedy. I think Kennedy was absolutely more than we're ever going to know. I don't think Kennedy, the official story on the Kennedy assassination, is true at all. I wasn't alive.
Right. So you get so that opens the door to not believing official
anything.
Things.
Right.
So
fine.
The moon landing, it didn't happen. And you come forward in time, and there are still people who argue that Muslims did the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City.
Oh, really? I never heard that spin. That's
oh,
a
yeah.
good one.
And then of course 2001 comes along, boom.
So that would make a McVeigh a patsy then.
Absolutely, and then of course you know you get Iraq and Afghanistan, and Iraq. Really is a false flag operation.
Exactly.
So when one of these things happens and it does turn out to be true, in the mental abilities of some people, it makes the likelihood of the rest of them being true. And so the American people believe nothing, and then we've got people who have a vested interest, like Alex Jones, in propagating this shit. Like I said, Sputnik was out there almost immediately with bullshit fact-free stories. Now, why would poor Sputnik ever do something like that?
It's funny you mention them because Hartman's all wrapped up with them. He's got a joint studio with them.
I know.
And the last couple days of the week, his stream was down. And I heard rumor that the big picture was canceled on RT. So I don't know if he pulled the plug or if they pulled the plug. You know, I think I might have mentioned this on your air once before, but it was real creepy to me that a bunch of these left-wing, you know, programs wound up on RT and or co-sponsored by Sputnik. Ring of Fire, which I thought was all right for quite a long time.
There's a lot of that money running around, okay? And if you're a progressive broadcaster, and believe
me, there's no money anywhere.
There's no money anywhere, so they show up with the money, you take the money.
I understand that part of it for sure.
I know you do. And I understand it exceptionally well. I mean, we entered the program this evening with $500 worth of challenges on the table. I can happily say that the first 200 have been met, and cool. we're about $25 into the $300 challenge. So that's, you know, that's huge, and it keeps us on the air. But we're never going to be able to build a video studio. We're never going to be able to do the things that capital improvements allow us to do. You know, we can replace a piece. We can occasionally replace pieces of equipment that go bad, but we never add stuff.
And this is I've had to explain this to people.
And I know you and Rick go through that.
Oh yeah, I mean, not to talk about that, but if you look back at the first 6 months of the TV program, we were shooting that with a webcam. And you know it looks kind of terrible. People don't like it. I was happy to produce anything with what we were doing it with. So now when you look at the product, the show 6 months in, 8 months in, it's awesome compared to where it was. And we both were not video people, so we learned an amazing amount in the last few months. And the product looks much better. But imagine if that had resources behind it. Imagine if it had resources behind it.
Sure. I have referenced on this program that, you know, I wouldn't pee on Glenn Beck if he was on fire. But I get the flop sweats over his tech and his set. God.
Oh, yeah. No. God. Yeah.
Or the set that Jim Cramer has on CNBC.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like static shots of people sitting at desks.
Can't help it, man. It is what it is.
And that's why, you know, I'm not going to do video here as long as it's just a static shot of me talking into a microphone.
Yep. And like originally my artistic input to Rick was, I want you to be up like a coach. I want you running back and forth in front of a chalkboard. And I want you to be able to make notes on the chalkboard and kind of like, you know, reference things. And I wanted to make him kind of animated like a coach. And that's not his vision. So that's cool. I do what people want. But that was my input. My input was get him up, get him moving, and kind of, you know, have that, you know. Jim Cramer's a good example. I mean, he's constantly moving around in the environment, you know, constantly. Gets near the camera, walks away from the camera. You know, that's kind of what I envisioned was a mobile Rick. And you're probably thinking a similar thing in your space, right? Like, how could you be more than just, you know, behind a radio desk?
Yeah, I want to move around. I mean, I sit here and flail my arms as it is.
You know, if you look at Bill Press, it's a static shot. You know, and I've said, well, that's just a static shot. And people say, well, he's Bill Press. I guess that's, you know, that's fair. But, you know, it's not exciting. How do you make sitting at a desk exciting?
Yeah. And where's the entertainment in it? I mean, okay, so it's a little bit different if you've got several people sitting at a desk and you're going from person to person to person to person. I get that.
Right.
That's a different dynamic. But if it's just me yakking into a microphone, pass. Because the video adds no value.
Right. Because there's nothing going on. Like like we're doing a thing now. We're doing like these Skype calls where you have the talking head one, talking head two, and then like we're trying to add graphics and stuff when they're available and live video when available. And
exactly.
You know, adding content to the stream so that you're always kind of, there's always something happening. Like, I like doing this thing where you have two people talking and then on the other part of the screen is like a video running or pictures flashing, you know, where there's other shit going on where you can kind of distract people from maybe just the talking head aspect.
Anything to keep people from having to look at me. But I mean, you know, you sound just like
Rick. Rick's like, can I hide behind the microphone?
Well, Rick and I are like brothers from different mothers. He is so damn good at what he does. He's of a certain age. He's the best. He's the best talker that's out there, bar none. And he's engaging, and he's funny, and he's got a wit like a razor blade that's been honed down to a wire. I mean, just and you know, oh well, goodness me, I'm hurt. He's. And I know that his struggle has been very similar, and he's done stuff I haven't been able to do, but all of that taken together. By the way, I just got a tweet from Pam, telling me that Hartman ended the contract with RT.
Good, that's terrific.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, and you know, that's not red baiting or anything. It's just it's uncommon, you know. And I don't know how long ago that was, but, you know, when Sputnik did what it did. And then, you know, but lo and behold, I was driving out of D.C. and I heard Sputnik radio for the first time. And I was like, whoa, this is weird.
Isn't it weird? I mean, you would think that you know, but the FCC doesn't really care. You see, if you pay all your stuff and you don't break the rules, you can pretty much broadcast anything. You know, non-coms have a bunch of rules they have to live with. Commercial stations can pretty much say anything.
Yeah, as long as you don't say booger.
Yeah.
And James just dropped me a note and said, I've met Bill Press. He's not going to be jumping around. He's more like a statue, the great man. Yeah, and that's not a criticism.
No, I wasn't picking on him either. I just like you, you know, the static shot, I'd like more than that as well. I'd love to see more than that. But, you know, in the case of Bill Press, not to pick on him or Rick Smith or what you would do as a video component if you just did a video with what you do as audio, you can't really make more of a radio show than here's a person at a console with the equipment that's needed to make the product. And, you know, what the only differences are the props around you, the things around you. That's the only thing that would change from show to show to show to show to show. Is the actual, you know, things around you, your coffee cup, your cup, you know, whatever it is, you know,
I love things like hand props. I love having things to play with, and there's that old, you know, the old DJ tradition of having a box of sound effects. I mean, that's sort of an homage that we pay with the, you know, with the cowbell. DJs used to have cowbells and clown squeaky bulb horns and slide whistles and to just to, you know, make it more than somebody talking between records. And I kind of come from that tradition.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like Harry Shearer on the show, he does, you know, does voices. You know, he does his own, a lot of his own characters. Or
oh
his...
God, yeah, Jesus, if only. Yeah, he's my hero. You know, it's like, well, you know, I've got a bunch of clips in a player, and then that's why I love to fall back on that clip from Fast Times. You dick, you know, it's just so it's so handy when you're talking
Perfect.
About right wingers.
Oh yeah, you dick.
And the other one, what are you people on dope? Yeah.
Yeah. If I ever do another program of my own, I'm going to build out a console of clips, whether it's a folder or actual tactile, you know, console. I'm going to make available to my myself
a series of effects and noises and things like that, because you're right. I mean, it's just it helps break up just the audio part. You can, this is time for a whatever, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? And that's, I think that's great radio when you can have elements and different things. And, you know, video is cool, but it's radio is actually, in my view, kind of cooler because, you know.
Oh, I like it better because it's theater of the mind.
You can have on whatever you want, too. You could be in your studio in the dark. You could be – I'm actually standing in the dark talking on the phone.
Well,
right
no, now. I kind of grieve the coming of cold weather because it means the end of naked radio here in the studio. So.
Yeah. Well, good for you, man. If you can do it that way, go for it.
Right. But see, that's the thing. You know, okay, everybody contribute or else I'll turn the camera on. You do not want to see this.
Yeah, imagine. All right, pay up or I'm taking off my clothes and turning the camera on.
Exactly. Arnold, you have yourself a good evening, my friend. Thanks for the call.
You left me laughing, Bob. Thank you, man.
I always enjoy our conversations. Take care.
I as well. Good night.
Bye now. Arnold calling from about 200 miles from here up in, well, the part of Pennsylvania that's not Philadelphia and isn't Pittsburgh and is therefore Alabama. Yeah, one of those progressives living in a tough place. Quick note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa regarding the moon landing was a Hollywood production, according to people in the know like Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. Due to lack of inexpensive computer generated graphics, it would have been cheaper at the time to do the actual moon landing. Wow. Okay. Thanks to send out before the program ends this evening. Like I said, we got about $25 into Matt's challenge. So thank you very kindly to our buddy Tom in the Bay Area. Thank you very much to Brian. Who jumped in. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very kindly to Glenn, and thank you very much to Nipper. Thank you, Nipper. And hopefully we'll take down the other $275 and meet it all. So before like 6 p.m. if you're listening to the podcast. Thanks, everybody. It's awfully good to be back. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of the topics I had for this evening. There's something about a mass slaughter and our willful determination to keep letting them happen that sort of steals all the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's I don't know. My lack of sympathy for Bob Corker will probably wait until Titanic Tuesday. Thanks to everybody who makes this all happen. Thank you to all of you who support the program and keep it going. Thank you so kindly. Thanks to everybody who listens and participates, however you do, because you're what makes the family community congregation the family community congregation. Thank you. Thanks to our all volunteer staff over in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky, and thank you very kindly to our news ninjas, and thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.